And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, what do you think about the elections that took place this week in New York and in Pennsylvania?
Well, they were, it continues a trend. The Democrats keep winning, and they actually keep outperforming. The Pennsylvania, this was the, I believe it was the eighth interim race for state house, six by the Democrats and two by the Republicans.
People keep resigning.
People keep resigning for various reasons. And there's going to have to be another one on primary day. It's Bucks County, one of the Philadelphia collar counties that generally they say decides the elections. And it was, the Democrats were favored. It was a Biden had won it. What have you, but I don't think they were favored as much as what happened. I mean, the Democrat won 2-1, 66.
Two to one?
Yeah.
What was the turnout like?
I'm not sure. They had snow that day, mm-hmm. But and of course the Republicans also used the snow excuse up in New York, but that's another reason why write-in ballots are important now, and the Republicans keep not using them. they're trying to change. They're trying to tell their people use write-in ballots in case the weather's bad or you can't get to the polls. The New York one, they picked a candidate, the Republicans, out of the Democratic Party. They were emphasizing different issues. And the last election, I believe, was a +8 for the Republicans, and this one was a +8 for the Democrats. Some of the polls had it at about a 3% race. It wasn't that at all. And the New York one was somewhat different. You know, Bucks County's had some issues percolating within the county about school boards and Christian nationalism and things like that. And of course, abortion's a big issue down there. But the New York race was that the other big issue that people thought were going to favor the Republicans, that was immigration. And on the eve of the vote, the Republicans in Congress blew up immigration reform. And the people in Nassau County and aren't that stupid. I think that they saw that, and the candidate, Swazi, jumped on that. He played jujitsu. He turned it right against the Republicans. Why are we going to send, if we're worried about immigration, why are we going to send someone to Congress to vote with the Republicans to destroy immigration policy? It just doesn't make sense. So that was in some ways, it was a pretty good day for the Democrats.
It was quite remarkable to me that as soon as the election was over in New York, Trump attacked the defeated Republican. He said she wasn't deferential enough to MAGA. If you don't support MAGA, MAGA's not going to support you. What more could she have done?
Look, that district was not a MAGA district. And, you know, Trump's... if she'd been MAGA, come out heavier MAGA, she would have lost by more. That's just, that was her dilemma.
Do you think he attacked her for that reason? Or do you think he attacked her because she was a her or because she was a black her? Or what? I mean.
All of the above.
All the above, yeah.
All the above. And he's, it's all his ego. He runs away from people. Guaranteed, if she wanted to take credit for it. You know, it's always heads I win, tails you lose with Donald Trump. So that was there. Now, it wasn't an entirely bad week for Republicans. I think we mentioned last week that Larry Hogan, the very popular governor of Maryland, former governor, have thrown his hat into the Senate race, which now makes that a competitive race. I can't remember the last time that Maryland had had a Republican senator. But out in Montana, maybe the most challenged Democratic senator out there, John Tester, was hoping that Matt Rosendale, who was a real MAGA Republican, was going to be the Republican nominee. And Rosendale, early in the week, announced his candidacy, and then 6 days later withdrew it because Donald Trump wouldn't back him this time. He backed a guy named Sheehy, who the Republicans think has a much better chance of beating Tester. And I think that pretty well says the odds. Now, Tester's won twice with narrow margins. You can't write him off, but it's going to be tough for him.
Tester's victory always lies in the Native American vote. That's his margin of victory.
The Union and the Native American vote.
There's nothing that I see that the Republicans have done that weaken him in that respect. So if Tester can get the Democratic vote out, he ought to win again by the half a point or so that he usually wins by.
Well, we'll see. And again, it depends on where independents fall in this as well. The Republicans going to have to navigate Trump's endorsement with trying to tack more to the center. And it's not a sure thing. Nothing is a sure thing. We'll have to see. I did want to mention something else back in Pennsylvania, though. We had talked about a few weeks ago that Jeffrey Yaz, the richest man in Pennsylvania, had been spending money through a couple of his organizations, this Commonwealth Leaders Fund, to attack Democratic state House legislators. He's up in Erie, I understand, in Altoona he was doing it, and he was doing it here in Luzerne County, attacking Jim Haddock and Eddie Paschinski. And it was a weird attack anyway. But this week was the filing, Tuesday was the filing deadline for running in the primary. And of course, if you don't win the primary, you don't run in November. And lo and behold, the Republicans didn't field a candidate against Eddie Paschinski.
That's peculiar.
It's more than peculiar. He's had some vigorous opponents the last couple times. He's won fairly easily, but if he was tagged as a vulnerable by the Republicans, and Jeffrey Yaz was spending money to soften him up, they couldn't get a candidate to run against him. That's really weird. It's really weird. It's political malpractice. But Eddie's a friend of mine. I'm sure he'll take it.
Right.
You got to take your wins where you get them.
So, well, I suppose they could mount a write-in campaign or an independent campaign. I guess an independent rather than a write-in. But the Republicans don't do that kind of thing.
Well, you might see somebody. I was thinking of that. There might be a write-in. But they'd have to organize it.
A lot of organizing.
It is. But again, the Republicans have been trending more down in Luzerne County. And that's a real troubled county because the director of elections, they've had problems running the elections the last couple times. And the director of elections resigned again. So they've had four or five directors of elections in the last 5 years. You need somebody with experience.
It's also a place that is undergoing a fairly dramatic demographic change. There's a huge growth in the Hispanic population.
And there was a big article in Politico that the Hispanics down in the Hazleton area, the southern part of Luzerne County, are more and more voting Republican.
Well, naturally, isn't that to be expected? I mean, after all, they're like everybody else. They have Democrats, they have Republicans, they have liberals, they have conservatives. They're not a monolithic group.
No, but don't forget, they were demonized by the Republicans for years when Lou Barletta was the mayor down there, trying to discourage them from even coming into the county and creating problems for them. And now they're being courted. The political article had an interesting take on it. I have to really reread it, but one of the reasons is that the clergy, the Hispanic clergy, are pro-Republican, and they've been in, encouraging their congregants that way. Why they're pro-Republican, I'm not sure on that. Certainly, you know, if Donald Trump is your man, he certainly is not the moral leadership that you would expect to see from a religious leader. But it's a problem for the Democrats, and could be a problem for Matt Cartwright. I know he spent a lot of time down there. That was Bognet country. But we'll just have to see how that works out.
Listen, Hazleton was the home of one of the early modern racist leaders, right? Barletta, Lou Barletta.
Yeah.
The thing about the racists is that they really believe in identity politics, but from the other side, that their identity is that there's a whole lot of people who are subhuman who have to be kept out.
Right.
They don't grasp. None of these people grasp that. All society, all of our society, all capitalist society is divided not on identity basis, but on class basis. They don't pay attention to that. So therefore, they don't make use of the strengths that they would have if they analyzed things that way, because they don't see it that way. Yeah. All of a sudden, after years and years, it turns out, guess what? There are reactionary priests, there are reactionary preachers, there are reactionary businessmen. They all vote Republican. Why shouldn't we, you know, combine with them? And the racists have to figure out a way to somehow depart from their racism, depart from their identity politics, so that they can maintain their ruling position. They have a problem. But that's the fact. If the Democrats get captured by the same identity politics, they'll rely on something that they ought not to rely on, can't rely on, because it's not there. It's just like the white working class. You ignore the white working class, so people who are workers who are white, they become fascists.
Yeah, well.
You follow the leadership that appeals to you, that makes a case for you. Whether or not they lie is a different matter. But like Lincoln said, you can fool a lot of people part of the time.
Yes, yes. And they've been very successful at doing that, the Republicans.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to Donald Trump, to be honest with you, and the trial. The trial in New York that was settled Friday night.
Yes.
I don't suppose you had a chance to look at the Ergeron, the justice's decision.
I saw parts of it. I did not go through it. I did not.
Well, it's 92 pages, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw some of the highlights of that.
Yeah.
In some ways it was not surprising, because don't forget the judge has already ruled that the organization had committed fraud. The question was how much and what other remedies the judge was going to impose. But the manner of the fraud was somewhat interesting. Don't forget that this came out of Michael Cohen's testimony after he was convicted on the Stormy Daniels case. And Cohen came out and talked about Trump and said that Donald's modus operandi was when he was looking for loans, he would overvaluate the value of his properties. And if he was being taxed, he would undervalue the value of his properties. He tried to have it both ways. And this kind of caught the attention of the prosecutors. And this was the case of overvaluation in order to get a loan. Now, Trump would say, well, I paid the loans back. Nobody lost anything. There was a victimless crime. But that wasn't really the point, and that really wasn't technically true. What happened is, because of his overvaluation, he got a more favorable interest rate than he would have. So he saved a lot of money. And that's what was being recaptured by the judge's decision in monetary value. But you had an even broader take on this in terms of what the trial was about.
Yeah, if you read the law, if you look at the law, this law's been on the books since about 70 years. It was put on the books by the Republican Party. One of the great proponents of this law when it was passed in New York State was Senator Javits, Jacob Javits, who was the Republican senator from New York and a mainstay of the Rockefeller Coalition. Sure. Now, the point of this law and the period of time in which it was passed was a period in which there was a lot of fraud in general, a lot of financial fraud in general in New York. And the legislature and the bankers especially felt that the system was imperiled by fraud, not any particular instance of fraud, but just a generalized fraud that threatened the integrity of the financial system as a whole. In other words, threatened the existence of capitalism. So they passed a law that said, we're not interested in whether you intended to commit fraud. And we're not interested if there was any particular individual victim of the fraud. If, in fact, fraud occurred, whether or not you intended it, and if, in fact, it was bad for the system that this fraud occurred, even though there was no particular victim, you're guilty. And that's what this trial was all about. Trump defended himself against an indictment that didn't exist. He said, nobody got hurt. I paid back the loan. That's not the point. And there was no allegation that anyone got hurt. And in fact, in the decision, the judge says, Donald Trump is not Bernie Madoff. This is not a case about arson. Nobody burned anything down. This is not a case about bank robbery. Nobody robbed the bank. This is a case about the integrity of capitalism. If you consistently act in such a way that what you do undermines the viability of the financial system, you are a danger to capitalism and you can't be allowed to do business. And I find, said the judge, that this is exactly how you carry on. You try to be in business by undermining the rules of capitalism generally, even though no one in particular gets hurt, but the system gets hurt. And therefore, everybody gets hurt. And therefore, you can't do it. And therefore, the main remedy is you can't run a business. And you have to give back what you got as a result of acting in this way that undermined the whole system. And he figured it out to be what it'll come down to at this point, something like $450 million with interest. But the important thing is, Trump, you can't operate a business here. Trump Jr., you can't operate a business here. Eric, you can't operate a business here. You are a danger to the system. You are a brigand. You are a bandit. And you want to get into the system? Do it the way Rockefeller did it. You can't do it that way because Rockefeller passed laws that doesn't let you do what he already did. Find another way to do what he did. But you can't do it by undermining the whole system. So his lawyer said, well, we'll appeal. Not so easy to appeal. He's got to put up the amount of money that he's liable for.
Bond.
Yeah, he's got to put up a bond for $350 million.
Yeah. And
you're experienced in bonds. Can he get that?
They're hard to get. And the question is, who's going to give it to him at this point? Don't forget, the other part of the judge's ruling was that he challenged the credibility of Donald Trump and Ivanka Trump and Eric Trump and Don Jr.
Yeah, and by the way, Ivanka got off only because of the statute of limitations, not because she didn't do what the others did, just that she did it earlier.
Yeah. But he said that they had intermittent memories. They remembered the things they wanted to remember and basically not the things that they didn't want to remember.
And they expressed no remorse.
Yes.
They didn't think that they did anything bad. Then they said they'd do it again. Why not?
Yeah, that's the Trump method. You know, never be contrite about anything. Just double down on that. And
that hurt them in this case.
Yeah, and which he did not do the death penalty. He did not break up the Trump Organization, but he put very stringent controls on it. He has a former judge overseeing things, and of course, the Trump Organization would violated that part of it. They were making transactions and transferring money without that judge knowing it. So he's now told Donald Trump, at Donald Trump's own expense, that he has to put in a further, basically an operating officer, to oversee the operations of this organization for at least the next 2 to 3 years. That's going to be interesting to see what comes out of that. And one of the other things that may be coming out of that is another case against Weisselberg, the accountant. I mean, right now the Trump Organization is operating without a chief financial officer because Weisselberg was convicted of fraud previously. And there had been rumors that he was negotiating some sort of a plea about perjury in the other case, in the previous case. And that thing has kind of been quieted for the moment, at least. But the judge that's been overseeing the Trump Organization has said that she has found some very interesting matters that are of question. And we'll have to see what else may come out of it. This thing may not be over yet. But Weisselberg's also an example of Donald Trump's ability to get people to sacrifice themselves for him. Michael Cohen was one of those. And of course, this week we learned that the criminal case is going to go to trial on March 25th. Again, that's Michael Cohen is involved as a witness on that case. That's the Stormy Daniels issue. The interesting part of that, everybody's saying, well, you know, it was long ago. It's not such a big deal. But what I think they need to frame it is, hey, look, we sent the agent to jail, the guy who was the middleman, Michael Cohen. Why shouldn't the principal be convicted and go to jail in the interest of justice? Now,
and why shouldn't he?
It's a good argument. Yeah, it's sort of like, well, the guys on the street selling drugs go to jail, but the kingpin doesn't.
Yeah,
now, that kind of argument. The only thing is, there's a real question when it gets to the appellate courts about whether they stretched the law to get the statute of limitations to apply to a felony rather than to a misdemeanor. We'll have to see about that. But it's that case is likely.
But
to
the
go.
Trump runs up against this to me often. Last week, Stephen Miller, the fascist who writes his immigration policy, was interviewed, and he said that they really have some real good plans for when they take office in terms of what they can do with immigration. They don't need Congress to pass anything. They can do it all internally in the various executive offices. And the reason they can do it is because there's a law in the books called the Insurrection Act, which was passed, in 17-something by Tom Jefferson's Congress, or anyway, in that period. And according to the Insurrection Act, which is still on the books, it is in the president's sole discretion to declare an insurrection has occurred, and it is also in his sole discretion to declare that you are guilty of insurrection, and therefore you can be arrested or fined or sanctioned according to the law, the provisions of the Insurrection Act. And that's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to rely upon. And in relying upon that, they can set up concentration camps, they can arrest all kinds of people, and so forth and so on. They can even federalize the National Guard of various states so that they can bypass the police forces in various states that way. That's what he can do. And that's what they're going to do. Well, if that's what they're going to do, that means it could be done today. So in that case, I want to know, why can't Biden say that Trump should be arrested for insurrection for Jan 6th?
Your logic seems to be there.
I mean, it cuts both ways, right?
Someone should be challenging the Stephen Millers on that, you know?
Yeah.
But what we find out is, of course, like I said, it's always heads they win, tails you lose. Oh, yeah. No, only we can do that. You can't do that.
We can't do that. That's right. Or they're going into court, and companies are going into court, challenging all kinds of, all manner of federal agencies, saying these federal agencies shouldn't exist. They're unconstitutional. Well, of course, that was settled in the first days of the New Deal, when these agencies were set up.
Right.
And the court at first ruled that the agencies weren't constitutional. Right. The NRA, one of them, was disbanded. But then the court changed its mind. And all the others, the CCC, the NLRB, all the rest of them, it was ruled they were constitutional. And they've been the objects of the right wing's displeasure since then. They've been trying to figure out a way to get rid of them. So now Amazon and Elon Musk have gone into court saying that the various agencies that regulate their activities are unconstitutional. Starbucks as well. Unconstitutional. What they want to do is dissolve the NLRB. They want to make it no longer legal to be a union member and to outlaw the procedure for certifying unions as collective bargaining agents. So in that case, the agencies shouldn't exist, according to the right wingers.
Right.
But the Trump people on the abortion issue intend to use those very same agencies to enforce their rules outlawing abortion drugs. You can't have it both ways. Either the agencies are unconstitutional or they're not unconstitutional. Are they unconstitutional for labor rights, but they're constitutional for anti-women's rights?
Well, that's the way they're going to play it.
Yeah, that's the way they're going to play it.
As I said, heads we win, tails you lose.
Right. That to me seems to be what the Democrats ought to be pointing out constantly.
Yeah. But this is, you know, this is a real ongoing struggle over regulation, about setting limits on what activities are legal and what aren't. And or what are fair and what isn't fair in terms of business. And of course, anytime you have a regulation, it has the effect usually of limiting profits, because it requires the spending of money in order to conform with those regulations.
But the regulations always exist to expand the freedom of the consumer, or the freedom of the worker, the freedom of someone who's not the corporate owner.
Right. That's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct. And of course, the big one is the regulatory agencies that affect the fossil fuel industry. You know, with the Koch brothers.
Right.
Are there and their profits.
We have something that regulates us, and it's called the clock.
Yeah,
we're done for this week. This is something we will see again, and we have to talk more about.
A quick note that Donald Trump this week gave a speech down in Harrisburg, and he warned Pennsylvanians that if he isn't elected, that they're going to change the name of Pennsylvania.
But to what? Falkenstein?
I don't know. Rosenworld.
Rosenworld. All right. Well that's a long word. Pennsylvania. Look at all those letters. It would be better if it was three or four letters. Utah. That's a good name.
East Utah. East right. Utah.
See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.